Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm very happy to welcome you to our Kelly Christmas Crazy Show for 2013. First up is a chat with my producer, Amber LeBrun, about the year that was and some of her Christmas family traditions. We then chat with book critic Karen Long about some great books you can read during your holiday break. The boys from a cappella group Straight No Chaser drop by to talk about their career and sing a classic Christmas favorite. You also hear new music from Mary J. Blige, and we wrap things up with one of my most favorite holiday tunes from Burl Ives, Holly Jolly Christmas.
Capture your need for sound.
It is that time of the year again, the official Kelly Christmas Crazy Kelly Alexander Show, and I'm very excited because we are joined right now by my producer, Miss Amber LeBrun. Hello, Amber.
Hello, Kelly.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too.
So I'm very excited to have you on. We had you on the show last year.
Yes.
So another 365 days have gone by.
I can't believe it. It feels like yesterday that we were planning this.
I know. It's crazy. So we're back at it again. And the Christmas show is always very important to me. I love Christmas, first of all, the holiday season, all that sort of good stuff. And I find it's always like a great time to reflect.
Absolutely.
And sort of, you know, see what went on during the year and what we hope to transpire as the year moves forward into the new year. So I wanted to ask you, though, if we have a little fun, I wanted to ask you, you know, what is your favorite memory from Christmas as a child?
Oh, there's so many. I have to say, one of my favorite things that we've ever done sort of in my family is every Christmas Eve, we decorate our tree. We never do it beforehand. It's always on Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
And the reason why we do that is because we're often sort of all over the place, and it's sort of the one day that we're all guaranteed to be home.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we set up the tree usually around the 20th, something like that. And then as a family together, it's usually sort of me and my two older sisters.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones who are putting the lights on, putting all the decorations on. And for us, it's all about having all the Christmas music on that we can possibly find. And then from there, we're literally divvying up all the Christmas decorations and we decorate everything. And then the rest of the afternoon is spent sitting watching one of our favorite Christmas movies.
That's awesome. And I should mention that you have at least one sister that lives out of the country. So it's very special.
Yes.
And we've had your special sister on the show.
Yes, we have.
For the Olympics last year. I can't even believe that's, you know, almost a year or two years already.
Come and gone again,
I know. It's crazy. So family's coming over for you again. And I actually wanted to mention, I think it's really cool that you do wait till the 24th, because what's your thoughts on, and you know, we're not here to judge, but I always find it interesting when people put up their tree in November.
I know. There's a few people who do that. I mean, part of me, I'm kind of going like, good for you, because I love Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. You are snow and happy crazy.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I've never met someone more excited for snow.
But at the same time, I kind of feel like, you know, yes, it's all about family and being together and everything. But I don't know. I kind of feel like in November, it's a bit early. Maybe the first week of December,
right.
I would understand it a bit more. But yeah, that does seem a bit early for me.
Do you find, though, that it, like, because some people put it up so early, that it almost loses its luster by the time actually December 25th comes around? Because I have one of my listeners that listens to me on the radio station I work for. I have seen her at least several years in a row now, December 25th afternoon. Like, as you know, you're sort of checking your Facebook anyways, right? And she'll, tree is down. And I'm like, this is the whole day the tree is up for. Like, this is what it's for. Why are you taking it down on the day? But she puts it up literally like somewhere around November 15th, November 20th. So she's already had it up for like, you know, almost 6 weeks or whatever. So she takes it down the night of Christmas. And I always think that's kind of odd in the fact that I feel like the holidays encompass Christmas and New Year's. So you should keep it up at least that week, you know?
I completely agree. My dad's birthday is actually on the 7th of January.
Okay.
So our rule in the house is the tree is up until the 6th.
And oh, very
good. The 6th, it comes down.
Okay. Which is little Christmas. That's what my mom does.
Yeah.
My mom keeps it up to, so, and I know everyone has different traditions. So yeah, and by no means are we, you know, judging you at all. It's just a little odd. I almost wonder if it's just the way society is now, because, you know, like July, there's Halloween costumes out, you know what I mean? And then you've already got Christmas competing with Halloween in October.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, I don't know if it's like a rushed society now that everyone just jumps, because as soon as Christmas is over, or not even over, it's Valentine's.
That's true.
You know,
I think it depends on the person, though, because I think really, you know, there are some people who absolutely love Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So even if their tree is up in the middle of November,
yeah,
they'll keep it up until, let's say, January 6th or right. even longer,
right.
just because they like Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think some other people are kind of look at it as, oh, Christmas is here already. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's get going. Let's try to be in the Christmas spirit. But mm-hmm. really, and I mean, if you think about it, it is a lot of work to put your tree up, to
yes.
get the decorations
yes.
up. You know, to put lights around your house as well. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. So I can also understand the other people who are saying, okay, we're over and done with this now. Let's put it away for another year. So I don't know. I do think it depends on the person.
Okay. I think that's a good answer. So what is your favorite, you know, holiday TV special? I think I've told you this before. I love Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Like, I love that show. So the claymation one with Burl Ives. That's my jam.
To be honest, I love them all.
You love them all? Yes, because you are Christmas crazy.
I really, honestly, I actually already know that I missed one this year and I got really upset.
And do you, actually, I wanted to ask you this. Do you, because like a lot of these Christmas specials, like Frosty the Snowman and yeah. Rudolph and the Grinch, like they're all available on DVD, right? Like
yes.
you can watch them in July should you fancy.
Yes.
I find that even though I don't think I have an actual copy of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but I know my sister does, but I feel like for it to really be Christmas, I have to catch it live on television.
I agree. I'm so totally the same way.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I'm not weird.
No.
Or
no.
we're both weird together.
Well, maybe. No, I have to say if like there are certain ones that I have to watch.
Okay.
And if I miss it, not only do I get really upset, but then I also will find a way to watch it somehow. Like, for example, Muppet's Christmas Carol is one of our family favorites.
Okay.
And that's something
okay.
that we have to watch every year.
Okay.
And we try to do it on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Just because some of the songs are all about like one more sleep till
yeah,
Christmas
yeah, yeah.
type of
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we always get all excited. So that's one movie that we have
mm-hmm,
to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say another one would be Charlie Brown's Christmas. That's another
right.
one that's way up there.
Yes.
But again, we have all these movies on VHS
yeah.
That we do still watch, but you know.
That is okay. It's all good. But I think it's interesting that it's like important to like to just catch it on and you
yeah.
know on TV. And I know it's like here where we are in Canada and the States, they run it on CBS. And it's like
right.
you and you see the promos coming up, you know, for 2 weeks in advance, like it's coming on November 30th or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's very exciting. What is your favorite holiday food?
Oh, Kelly, why are you asking me this?
There's so much. I know.
I also love food of all kinds. Christmas is one of those times where, you know how a lot of people go, oh, I have to watch what I eat. And I go, yes, you do. But this is 1 week where I don't. Probably I would have to say the chocolate. I love
chocolate. Anything?
Chocolate anything.
Okay.
I will just eat it.
Do you I know like you are not, you know, 12. Do you still get an advent calendar?
We've never gotten advent
oh,
calendars, actually.
Seriously?
Funny enough, I, for years, have been trying to coerce my parents into getting us advent calendars
yes.
just because I like the idea of eating chocolate every day.
Yeah.
Though my mom's response was, if I were to get you an advent calendar,
mm-hmm.
the chocolate would be gone before you got there, which is
oh.
true. Because
you really think you couldn't control
no,
yourself?
No, I couldn't.
Because that's like part of the battle. It's like you have to wait
See,
like that next day.
Because all of my family's home this year, too,
mm-hmm.
and again, if we were to have one of these calendars, I would also probably try to steal chocolate from other people.
Oh,
and
I understand
be like,
it.
I don't know what happened.
Okay.
It's just gone. Because that's just what I would do.
Very good. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our awesome producer, Amber LeBron. And I wanted to take this moment, actually, to thank you for all your effort all
oh, no
year
problem.
Long, because I would be, you know, without a paddle down a creek, and it would be terrible if you weren't with me. So thank you so much for all of your efforts.
Not a problem.
I guess I wanted to ask you if we reflect back a bit. We talked a little bit about reflecting on the year. Is there a situation that happened in 2013, whether it's personal or, you know, worldly, that really stuck out for you?
I'm someone who loves the news and it's something that I follow all the time. And
mm-hmm.
I have to say one of the biggest stories that really sort of got to me this year
mm-hmm.
would have to be the Boston bombings.
Right.
And I say that because my eldest sister who lives in London, Tracy, she actually runs marathons all the time.
Okay.
And she was running in the London Marathon.
Like the following week or whatever it was. Yeah.
Or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So when that happened, my first reaction was, oh God, I hope, you know, despite this is being in Boston, not London, thankfully,
mm-hmm.
at the same time I went, my God, this is going to have a huge impact,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then not only that, just following that story, I mean, it was like watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was just crazy how everything started and ended.
Right.
You know, that to me, that was just,
what's
that
your,
was really tough.
What's your take on, and I know this happens all the time, but like when it comes to that, you know, the Boston bombing, there's, you know, been obviously 9/11, which was huge, you know, over a decade ago. Do you find that in today's society, like we pay so much attention to the situation in the immediate, you know, like, oh, it's terrible. There's, you know, three people that died, whatever it is. And then we forget about them. Like, do you think that, you know, these people that lost their legs or lost limbs or whatever, do you think they will be forgotten?
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest with you. And okay. I think it's unfortunate. But I honestly wouldn't be surprised, just because we see these types of things all the time, and unfortunately it doesn't just happen in the US. It doesn't just happen in Canada. Mm-hmm. It happens all over the world all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unfortunate, and a lot of people are involved in these things, but there's so much of it that we see on a daily basis that I think it's hard for anybody to really keep track of the actual people that were affected by it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
I guess it's sort of like the human way to, obviously we have to move forward. You can't just sit there and be somber for years and years and years, but it's, you know, even the Sandy Hook situation, which I know is, you know, essentially in 2012, but even that, you know, that was so huge for a while. And then even that, you know, has sort of gotten under the rug. And again, I know we can't wallow when we have to move forward. And I'm sure the people that did pass away would not want anyone to wallow either, you know, in the grand scheme.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, it's interesting how it's always like big and bad and immediate, and then it just sort of wafts away. But I do, like you said, think the Boston thing was such a terrible situation. And I'm so proud of these people that were injured, because they have such resolve and a determination to carry on, you know?
Well, what I think was amazing about the whole situation, and there was countless stories of this, was just how people in the crowd ran towards what was happening instead of away from it. That wouldn't happen everywhere.
No.
You know? And I mean, there was so many courageous little stories that happened from that. And even the people who were injured, I mean, just them speaking out about their experience, what they saw, what happened to them. I take my hat off to them for telling their story. Because that couldn't have been an easy thing either.
What do you think is going to happen in 2014? Like, with whatever. Do you have a thought of, like, you know, this might happen in 2014, whether good or bad? Like, you know, obviously I think that, like, the World Cup is coming, which everyone's so excited about. It seems like Brazil is going to be like the place to be in the next little while, obviously, because they're getting Olympics soon.
I'm curious to see what's going to happen in Sochi, just because there seems to be quite a bit of controversy around it. And that's sort of, I guess, the newest thing coming, because it's happening in February, I believe.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to see just what happens, because I think we're going to see a lot more of the competitors, let's say, tweeting or being on social media, but being more reserved about what they say, or being very careful about what they're going to say.
Yeah. And I would go out on a limb and say that, you know, there, I'm sure, are a bucket load of athletes that are gay.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
And it must be so difficult for them on some level to know that they want to go there. Because I know a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, we should boycott. But like, these athletes have been training for years.
That's right.
And they want to go and do their best for their country. So yes, on one level, I'm sure they themselves would be like, yeah, I don't need this crap. But then it'd be like, but I've been training my rear end off to represent my country, so I'm going.
That's right.
You know, because I know one athlete, actually, who, she is not out, but she is gay, and she's on the Canadian team, and she'll be heading over there. And, you know, I wish her the best of luck, you know,
Absolutely.
Because she wants to go. She's like, I've been training, I'm going.
Well, I don't, and that's the thing. I don't think anyone's sexual orientation should prevent them from doing anything. And I think the Olympics should be like way
free
high
of
up
this,
there,
right?
On that list.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
And it should be free of this.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
But you know, at the same time, each country has their own rules and laws, and I understand that. But I don't know. It's a really, really tough thing, I think.
Well, especially, it's interesting what you just said, because, you know, they obviously applied to get this, you know, and so they should have been aware of the fact, like, you know, even if it's what they want to do as a country, you know, or whatever, or they think they want to do that, don't trumpet the fact, you know, you've wanted the Olympics, you've got them, you have all these countries coming to you, this is the time to suspend your beliefs, almost, in a way, I feel, like, you know.
Well, I think what's interesting is just the fact that they've come out very strongly against,
yeah, like, this
anybody
is our way or the highway,
out against or for anyone who's gay or bisexual or lesbian or anything. And I kind of look at that and go, well, why are you drawing in all this attention?
Right.
That being said, I don't think they expected so much pushback from everybody,
right,
and from people all over the world.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that's going to be an interesting thing leading up to the Olympics too, because I don't think this is a topic that's going away anytime soon.
And maybe this will change things.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice. That would be really great.
I think that would be really nice.
That would be great. Yeah. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our producer, Amber LeBrun. So back to holidays for just a sec.
Sure.
What is the best gift that you have received?
Oh, that's easy. Years ago, I'm a huge Montreal Canadiens fan. Huge.
Yep.
Love them. Go to see games. Watch their games on TV if I can't be there. And years ago, I used to ask to get a game jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked for years and years and years. And my parents kept saying, it's really expensive. You know, we just can't afford it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they would get me T-shirts and little things like that. Mm-hmm. And then there was one year, it was my last gift. And every year at Christmas, I always get so sad. And I'm like opening it really slowly going, it's the last gift of Christmas. And here I am opening this one gift. And sure enough, it happened to be a hockey jersey. And I screamed my head off.
Nice.
And jumped up and down. And my whole family went, wow, that was the best reaction. And
awesome.
I literally wore it all day. Even
that's
at dinner,
awesome.
I'm like, I don't care. It's my jersey.
Was it their the red one?
Yes.
Yes. It's all about the red. Very good. So before I let you bounce again, thank you so much for all that you do for the Kelly
Not
Alexander Show. You can learn more about Amber, by the way, on our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and just check out our team page. And so last question, you know, because it's the holiday spirit, what song would you like us to play here on the Kelly Alexander Show?
You have to play Let It Snow.
From who? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter.
Excellent.
It's just the best song ever.
So this is going out for Amber and to all of you who listen to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Let it snow. 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 Let it snow.
One of the best parts of the holidays is being able to sit, put your feet up by the fire, and get a bit of extra rest and relaxation. And what better way to do that than to curl up with a good book? Book critic Karen Long joins us to talk about what's hot this holiday season. Karen, we're so happy to have you back on The Kelly Alexander Show.
I am delighted to have a return engagement, Kelly. Thank you.
So can we talk, first of all, I guess, about, you know, some holiday classics? Because I think I would be remiss if I didn't bring that up. So do you think some of these books like, you know, The Grinch and A Christmas Carol and all that, are these books that everyone should read at some point in their lives?
Yes. And if you can, read them en famille. Gather your family around and read The Christmas Carol and assign the loquacious character to the uncle who talks too much, and it's such a blast to do family reading in that way. The Worst Christmas Ever is a fabulous short chapter book that's great for family reading.
And are there ones out there that some people may not really think about, you know, that is a classic, but people be like, oh, I didn't even know that that was a classic?
You know, I haven't thrown my mind around Dickens is, for better or for worse, the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different versions of The Christmas Carol you can imbibe on the television, but there is something about the snuggle at this time of year with across the generations, if you can manage it, that no screen will ever replicate.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I wanted your opinion about, you know, books that have been made into movies. I'm a big proponent of, I sort of need to, if I'm going to watch the movie, I need to watch it before I read the book, because if I read the book, the movie always sucks. So.
Well, it's just a different modality, you know, doing different things. And your brain chemistry is actually very different when you're watching as opposed to when you're co-creating, which is what you do when you read a book. And if the characters turn out to matter greatly to you, like the Harry Potter characters, my children didn't want to see the movies because it scrubs away your version of Hermione Granger. They did, because it was such a big part of the culture. But there's a little bit of loss when you go passive and take the screen version in.
What would be a couple of your all-time favorite, you know, holiday books to read? Or are there books like at this time of the year would be, you know, a great thing to sort of delve into? Because I'm assuming, you know, some people actually have, you know, maybe a week or two off at Christmas, and it seems like this might be the best time to get into something.
Right. Well, from this year, I would say hands down, the best novel to lose oneself in is Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch. It's showing up a lot on the year's best lists. I finished it this week, and she wrote The Little Friend, The Secret History. She writes a book about once every 10 years. It's a huge occasion. The Goldfinch is a story of a boy who goes to the Metropolitan Museum of Art with his mother. She's furious at him because he's been suspended at school, and they're waiting for their meeting with the principal, and the bomb goes off. So the book starts as a mother-son love story, and it becomes a meditation on art and loss and friendship and the fates and how things can come out right in the end. And she writes so intelligently. It's a thrill to enter her world. So I've already given that book to several people with fall birthdays, and I'll be giving it more to friends at Christmas.
Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is book critic Karen Long. For more information about the National Book Critics Circle, which she is a part of, make sure to check out bookcritics.org. What are the hot books in your mind that are sort of, you know, coming out right around now, Karen? Like, is there anything that sort of really struck your eye since we've spoken the last time?
Yes, you can bet that Stephen King's new book is going to be under thousands of trees. And it's his follow-up to The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Dr. Sleep. And Stephen King has written more than 50 books, and every single one of them have been bestsellers. And whether he's your cup of tea or not, they are catnip. It's hard once you start to read Stephen King to put him down. And I like to think about him as part of the mainstreaming of horror. You know, horror has come off the margins of culture and is now sat in the middle with The Walking Dead and a whole lot of other things going on. And I think of Stephen King as one of the conveyors of this trend. And he's also, he's really smart, and he's a good writer. He goes too fast, in my opinion. He wrote a great book called On Writing, but he doesn't take his own advice. He's a little compulsive in how quickly he writes. But his book, Dr. Sleep, picking up from The Shining, read the first page, and I dare you to try to stop.
I wanted to ask you as well, you and I chatted about this last time, how I'm a massive John Grisham fan. And since we spoke, his new book, Sycamore Row, is out. Have you heard anything about it? Because I have not had a chance to take a look at it yet.
It's selling briskly, which isn't a news flash, because he does sell. And I think what I've heard is that he delivers another good one for his fans. I would also throw into the mix Daniel Woodrell, Woodrell, best known for writing Winter's Bone. He is this master of Ozark darkness, and he's got a short book out called The Maid's Version, M-A-I-D apostrophe S, The Maid's Version, which is roughly based on his own grandmother. And I was having lunch with someone today, and a scene from that book just slotted right into my head. He is so good and deserves a wider readership.
Wow. Okay, that's great to look out for. Have you seen any biographies come out, you know, in the last 2 months that have caught your eye at all, Karen?
Yes, this has been a good year for biography, and I think the breakout biography this year, Kelly, is Lawrence in Arabia by Scott Anderson. And we think we know Lawrence of Arabia from the movies, from The Conquering, from the mess that is the Mideast. But this book is revelatory, partly because Scott Anderson gives a lot of secondary players their due, writes beautifully, and makes you feel smart in his company. And what is such a naughty place in the world for most of us who live on this continent gets clearer when you read Lawrence in Arabia by Scott Anderson. There's also a great new Johnny Cash biography out. And, you know, here's a conservative, at times racist, Southern bad boy, and yet he made the hurt in his life transcendent through his music and across generations. It's by Daniel Hilburn, H-I-L-B-U-R-N, who is a writer at the Los Angeles Times who knew Johnny Cash and was actually at the Folsom Prison concert that remade him. So I like it because it's fair and it doesn't puff him up and it doesn't turn away from some of the less attractive parts of him.
Have there been any books about Hillary Clinton and stuff coming out? Because I'm assuming that they're gearing up for her, you know, with regards to 2016.
That's such a good question, Kelly, because there'll be a struggle over who controls the narrative over Hillary Clinton. And one of the ways that politicians invariably do this is by writing a book to coincide with their campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Her own writing about herself has been a snore. She is a guarded person, and that it can be death on the page. And she hasn't managed in the way that Barack Obama did with his book about his father to break into that intimate place with the reader. I don't know if she's working one up or not. Do you?
No, I hadn't heard anything, but I think she's starting a tour of some kind, because I'm pretty sure I saw a note pop in my inbox about her making her way to Montreal, Canada. So I'm assuming that she'll be going around other places as well, I guess, drumming up some excitement about herself.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is there any sort of classic biography, Karen, that, you know, maybe that sticks out to you in the last, you know, couple of years that you would say might be some good holiday reading?
Oh, good question. Let me think on that for just a second. Classic biography. You know, one of the greatest books of all time was Montaigne's essays that he wrote in the 1500s, the French intellectual, where he took up the great issues of life and basically invented the personal essay.
Okay.
And Sarah Blakewell did this phenomenal book a couple years ago on Montaigne's essays by going back and looking at how all these figures in history reacted to them, when they were banned, when they were resuscitated, how which intellectuals liked which points, what reverberated with ordinary people. It was such a great bank shot of a book. I'm going to get you the title here. Sarah Blakewell, she's a British smart, snappy writer and mm-hmm. scholar, is the author. And it's called How to Live, A Life of Montaigne in One Question and 20 Attempts at an Answer. And I always like something that kind of turns over the engine in the dark of winter, where your brain is enlivened. Mm-hmm. And she's great at that.
I think we briefly talked about this the last time I had you on, you know, in the fact that the royal family always seems to be of interest to different people. Has there been anything that again, you would recommend as, you know, holiday reading about the royals that might just sort of be a relaxing read for someone?
Oh, yes. Great question. And I have a good stocking stuffer for that. And it's called The Uncommon Reader, or Uncommon Reader. It's a little novella, so it will be done in an afternoon, by Alan Bennett. And he's the playwright who wrote The History Boys. And The Uncommon Reader, in his wonderful pastry of a book, is Queen Elizabeth. And he imagines her encountering essentially a bookmobile near Buckingham Palace. And it's just a joyful book and a wonderful have your tea and biscuit kind of book.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And can you put out the name? Because I think last time we spoke, you actually put out the name of the author who you said is sort of the person to go to when it comes to the royals. And I'm forgetting their name, but you had mentioned it, I'm pretty sure.
Hilary Mantel?
Yeah, I think that was it. Okay.
Yes. She's writing a trilogy about the scurrilous royals of the Tudor era.
Okay.
So she's doing a three-parter, starting with Wolf Hall, that is told from the perspective of Thomas Cromwell.
Oh.
And it's the book I would take to an island if I had to pick one book, because it's a study of the acquisition of power by somebody who did it better than any commoner in the history of England up to that point, and then, of course, of his downfall. And the exhilarating part of this is she storybooked every scene, because if you're writing in England and you put Jane Seymour in the wrong castle on a winter afternoon, mm-hmm. you're going to hear the howls. So she writes a fictional account, but she gets all the facts right.
Okay.
As knowable as they are. Phenomenal book, Wolf Hall.
This might be a little bit out in left field, but I'm just wondering if there's anything on this. I know, you know, right now the hot place in the world seems to be the Middle East with, you know, all the money that's going on over there and just the amount of, you know, luxury and opulence that happens over there with the amount of money going on. Is anyone writing about what's going on over there, whether it's fact or fiction?
Oh, boy, you've caught me a little flat-footed on that, because I know there are good books.
Okay.
And I'm not a good scholar of the Middle East.
Okay.
One of the reasons Lawrence in Arabia
mm-hmm.
lit me up. So that is the book of the moment that I'd send people
okay.
toward.
Okay.
But I will say, with all the trouble in Chechnya,
yes,
there is a breakout first novel that Barack Obama bought a week ago Saturday when he was shopping in Washington, D.C. And it's called A Constellation of Vital Phenomena by Anthony Mara, M-A-R-R-A, which is set in Chechnya and is a great first story.
Oh, okay, that's great. And the name of the author again?
Anthony Mara,
okay.
Dennis and Mary, A-R-R-A, and the title is A Constellation of Vital Phenomena.
Perfect. Now, again, it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask you this. A lot of kids are obviously going to be on holiday break. What would you like to see them pick up as opposed to their video games?
Oh, boy. Well, I have a few thoughts there. And part of the intimacy of giving a book or engaging someone with a book is being a good listener yourself. What lights the kid up? And if a book doesn't occur to you when you find out some child loves archery, though you should be thinking of The Hunger Games, you can consult your local librarian. And I feel like librarians are one of the great underused resources of our era. They know so much and they're rarely asked.
Oh, wow.
And they are sitting there really at their stations ready for that consultation of what book might be great for a reluctant reader. The Wimpy Diary is always a great entry book because it's partly drawn. There's great books for reluctant readers. There's books of science fiction and fantasy. And there's, you know, the picture book. We're living in a golden age of picture books. So go to the library, take out 6 picture books. If one sets your child afire, buy it. But, you know, don't forget that that resource is low-hanging fruit for every family.
And before I let you go, are there a couple of books that you would love for us to really sort of delve into, whether it's sort of over the holiday break or even heading into the new year? Because I know a lot of people make New Year's resolutions about making more time for themselves. So maybe we can sort of lean them into doing that with reading.
Great. Here's a book with a Canadian piece that I would recommend as one of the stellar novels of the last few months. It's by Ruth Ozeki, O-Z-E-K-I. It's called A Tale of the Time Being. And I heard about it because Yunal Diaz, who wrote The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, came to Cleveland and was saying, people, read this book. And it's a time-traveling book set between a 16-year-old girl in Tokyo and a blocked writer in Vancouver on an island. And she picks something up in the surf, a Hello Kitty bag, that seems to be from this girl in Tokyo. It's really a strange and beautiful and intriguing book. And I was so happy to have discovered it this year. And it has a little bit of Canada in it, so that's good too.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Great. Karen, thank you so much for your time. I always appreciate having you on the show.
Well, I so appreciate being listened to, Kelly. If my kids aren't going to do it, it's nice that you do.
That's awesome. That is our book critic, Karen Long, again, a part of the National Book Critics Circle, so you can check out their website, bookcritics.org.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We are very excited here on the Kelly Alexander Show to be joined by the boys of Straight No Chaser. Hello, boys.
Hi there.
There's like 10 of you, right? 9, 11,
yes,
10? Look at
10.
Me, yes. Okay, good. So I wanted to ask you, because, you know, we have a lot of people listening from all over the world. How did you guys become a unit?
We all actually met. We were at school at Indiana University, and we met there. We were part of a bigger choir and kind of wanted to break off and do our own thing and sing music that we wanted to sing for girls and free food or both. So just kind of started that way, and we left that group at Indiana University. It still exists as a legacy group, and we all kind of went our own separate ways until a little YouTube video kind of went viral 6 years ago this month, actually.
That's awesome. And so you all came back together again?
Yeah, yeah.
And were you all like spread out across the country or still in like Indiana?
We still are. Yeah.
Oh, you still are. Oh, very nice.
Really coast to coast, and we spend, you know, anywhere from 6 to 9 months on the road. So when we get off the road, we just all scatter and go to our separate corners.
Very nice. Now, how do you guys decide, A, which songs you're going to sing, and B, who does the parts? I know you're probably all proficient in your own part area, but like, do you all sort of switch it up, or how does that work?
It's all dependent on who arranges the song. You know, okay. We do all of our arrangements within the group, and usually the guy arranging a song has a good idea of who he wants singing it, where it is in his range. But as far as song choices, it's pretty much all over the map. You know, it's, you've got 10 guys in the group, so 10 strong opinions on what we should be singing. We have large audiences everywhere we go that range from 8 years old to 80 years old, everything in between. So we have a really large variety of music to choose from to please everyone in the audience. So you're going to hear everything from way back in the day to stuff that's on the radio now.
And when you guys are putting it together, I know you said you're all spread out across the country. So do you guys like spend like at least a month together before you hit the road, like working on new stuff, like to get it all together?
We get together before each tour for a week or so and rehearse new music, new choreography, new staging. And, you know, every day when we're out on the road, we have a sound check and we rehearse new music and even older music as well, just to make sure everything is still working smoothly. So we do rehearse a ton.
Now, how is it like being on the road with 10 boys? Because I've interviewed other bands before, like, you know, Backstreet Boys and stuff, and they sort of say they have like a down to a science because there's five of them. But like 10, that's double the trouble.
it is double. It's exactly double. We also have our crew on the road, and we have an opening act with us. So we travel with 17 people on two buses, and we're kind of like brothers. Like I said, we're on the road all the time together. So we know each other, and we know when somebody's tired and or in a bad mood, and just give them a little space. And we help each other out, and it's like being on the road with your family.
You guys have obviously traveled all over the place. Do you have a special, you know, place that you like being in the most? Do you enjoy going to other countries? Like, what's it like? Do you
Montreal?
Montreal,
we love Montreal.
Perfect.
The
that's a good
most,
answer.
Obviously,
best
and
answer
Guam.
Ever. Guam
as well.
Yeah. I appreciate that. But do you guys have like special? And do you notice a difference in your fans? Like, is there a difference in the audience depending on where you are in the country?
I mean, the fans, just looking out in the audience, like Seggy said, it's a huge range of ages and types of people and stuff. I think this is a genre that kind of attracts people from all walks of life. But as far as our favorite place to perform, I mean, we love going home to Indiana and performing there, especially at Indiana University. But we just love seeing new places and making new fans.
That's awesome. And where do you want to go with this? Like, I mean, obviously it's been working well for a while. What's the ultimate plan of action? Like, keep going for as long as you can? Because obviously, like, I find this is never out of date. Like, because you can always, like you said, pick up new music from whoever and reinterpret it. But it feels like this genre of music is never out of style.
Well, we
like,
hope
unlike,
so.
Unlike Lady Gaga, you don't have to go away for a while.
Yeah, and we've done Lady Gaga songs.
There you go.
And it's a lot of fun. But
do you all wear meat dresses? Or
we
very good. Okay.
Meat suits.
Okay, meat suits.
No, we love what we do, and it's amazing that we get to call what we do on stage every night a job. So I think we'll do this as long as there are audiences that want to see it. And like you said, it is something that can go on, and you know, we can keep doing whoever comes out next year, or go back and find a song like we did for this last Christmas record, the Otis Redding song that was a part of that was almost lost in a warehouse fire, and it was saved from that, and we were able to use that, and not a lot of people had heard that track before. So we've got, you know, 50 75 years of music from the past and everything coming up that are potential to be in our show. So,
and how do you feel about the Christmas tunes? Because like, I feel like Christmas is obviously a huge part of what you guys do, and I feel like your audience must go ape, you know, bananas. I'll beep that out. If I put a le in front of it, it makes everything go well. So how is Christmas tunes for you guys? Because do you get the most reaction out of that? Or is it like a popular tune like a Lady Gaga? Is that what brings it the most?
It depends on the season. You know, when we come out and do 12 days, it's going to get a crazy reaction, whether it's June or December. But I think as far as Christmas music, we've pretty much sang every Christmas song there is. So we've had to start writing our own now. Okay. On our new EP, we have two original songs that we've written. And, you know, that's another aspect of what we're trying to do. You know, not only do we have everyone else's music, we also are starting to have our own as well. So I think our goal is three buses.
Yeah. Awesome. And final question. Obviously, what you guys do is very sort of stylized, and you have your rhythm down. Is there an artist or producer that you guys would love to work with, just to sort of see how that would turn out?
People always ask that all the time, and that's
so much for my originality.
That's how the last two albums came about. You know, our management and label said, "Hey, who would you guys want to do some guest artist tracks with?" And we put a list together, thinking that everyone would come back and say, "Yeah, okay, no way." And all of them came back and said yes. So honestly, whoever wants to work with us, you know, we're very, like Charlie said, this is a dream come true. So anyone that wants to work with us, we will definitely work with them. And you know, if you ask each of us individually, you're going to get 10 different answers. You know, Ryan Tedder, mm-hmm. Timbaland would be really cool. See what he would do with some of our vocal percussion. David Foster, there's, you know, being here in Canada. But yeah, the list goes on and on. But really, it just comes down to we would gladly welcome anyone into the studio and work with us.
Forgive me for not knowing this. Have you done a Justin Bieber track yet? Or are we staying?
Yes, we have.
Good for you. That's awesome. Okay, very good. Boys, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Here are the boys of Straight No Chaser on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, we're Straight No Chaser.
And we're hanging out with you on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. Loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
I'm always on the lookout for new music, and as this is the holiday season, I like to check out Christmas CDs. And a new Christmas CD that you are going to love is from Mary J. Blige. It's called A Merry Christmas, and here's a little taste. This is Mary J. Blige with This Christmas on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. Yeah. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright. Dark here. My world is filled with cheer with you. This Christmas, and as I look around, your eyes, they outshine the time they do. This Christmas, by your side, blazing bright, we caroled it through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas.
Kelly Alexander Show.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, yes sir, once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
A big thank you going out to my guests this week, Amber LeBrun, Karen Long, and of course, the boys of Straight No Chaser. I also want to take a moment and give a huge thank you to my entire Kelly Alexander Show team, especially my technical director, Esteban Vargas, who works so hard for me all year long. Also, I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to the Kelly Alexander Show each and every week. I really appreciate your time. Have a very Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year. All the best for 2014.